Chapter 16, Turkey.
We left San Francisco to go to Turkey in 1969. And because of my good connections with Elmer Lauer, who was the strategic person who sent me to South America when he was vice president of news with NBC, was now the president of news of ABC. I called Elmer and told him I'm going to Ankara. Can I do you any good there? And he said, yeah, I'll make you a stringer. Gave me full credentials that I was an ABC correspondent. And when I got to Ankara, I went to the embassy, the United States embassy, presented myself as both the Fulbright professor and the ABC correspondent. And they were delighted with both. That turned out to be not a very good decision on their part. But they were delighted with both. And I filed stories for ABC, radio mainly, some television. And it all came to a head on Mobilization Day in 1969, when Americans around the world were asked to show their discontent with the Vietnam War by staging peaceful demonstrations. Sergeant Shriver was the ambassador, the U.S. ambassador to France, and he opened the embassy gates and invited a large group of Americans who were in Paris at the time. They came in, sat down on the lawn. The whole thing went well. Their silent protest was noticed, was photographed by the news, was broadcast by the news, was printed by the news. In Ankara, we had a jerk who was the ambassador. A hard-nosed ambassador with a reputation for heavy drinking. He locked the gates of the embassy, stranding the small number of Americans in Ankara outside at the mercy of the Turkish police. It was a nasty situation. The crowd dispersed because they didn't want to have any part of it. All they wanted to do was sit down on the lawn of the embassy in a very peaceful demonstration of their being discontented with the Vietnam War. Well, not much happened out of that, except Joanna wrote a letter to the International Herald Tribune, which they published, really raking the U.S. ambassador to Turkey over the coals, pointing out what had happened in Paris, just lambasted him. From that moment on, we were persona non grata with the U.S. embassy in Ankara. As a matter of fact, they took it to extremes. The cultural affairs officer there, who was supposedly my contact at the American embassy in Ankara, threatened me before the demonstration with expulsion as a Fulbright professor if I reported it. Well, I called my buddy with the AP in Ankara, fine American journalist, told him about this. He said, wow, this is a story. He says, I don't think they can do that. He called the cultural affairs officer and tried to get a statement from him on a threat that I said was made to me. And the cultural affairs officer backed down completely. As it turned out, their blunder with me, they really could have thrown the book at me, the State Department. Their blunder had been to receive me regally as a correspondent when the terms of the Fulbright said I could have no extra employment in Ankara that coincided with the time I was a Fulbright professor. The embassy was on record as having accredited me. They had broken the law. And so they got off my back, but we were persona non grata. We lost, what do they call the PX, the AFX?
The PX, the base exchange.
The base exchange. We never had accreditation to use it, but we had other goodies that went with the base. You were a student on the base. I used to go out there for a hamburger and a milkshake, things that were not easily obtainable in Ankara, Turkey, outside of the base. It just was a way of life. I was cut off from American officialdom. That wasn't too bad. What I did have, because of my Turkish accreditation as a journalist, I had privileges to the Turkish PX. And there wasn't an awful lot in the Turkish PX that I wanted to buy. But I do remember I bought a black police leather jacket in the Turkish PX and a hookah, which is a big water pipe that all the old gents sat around the tea houses and coffee houses taking puffs out of. I don't know whatever happened to that. Something happened. I also got a warming device, a set of copper pans in which you could put charcoal and you could cover it. So there was no smoke, but you could light the charcoal and the room would get some heat. I don't know what happened to that either.
We talked about how you went to Ankara, Turkey on a Fulbright and you got a full correspondent, foreign correspondent accreditations, but you went there to teach. So talk about what the teaching experience and what university you were at.
I was accredited to be a professor of journalism at the University of Ankara in Turkey. This was probably one of the most disappointing periods in my life. It was a weird experience. We ended up in Kavaklıdere, which is one of the higher points in the city of Ankara, upper-class neighborhood that it was inhabited mainly by Turks, but there was a scattering of Americans. The other section of the city where the U.S. Embassy was almost a golden ghetto. Americans really, really populated that area. We really didn't want to be in that kind of a setting, so and yet we wanted nice quarters. We ended up in Kavaklıdere. We hired a woman who was working in the building to be a full-time servant of ours. And her husband was a handyman, and he took care of various things that needed fixing. My job at the university meant I had to deliver lectures to a group of students, none of whom were proficient in English. A couple of them spoke it kind of scatteringly. But generally speaking, I was before a group of Turks who spoke only Turkish. The State Department provided me with an interpreter, a woman from the university. I prepared my lectures in advance, in writing, submitted them to her. She translated them, and in the classroom, I talked about the various techniques of journalism and television. I would deliver two or three sentences and stop, and she would then deliver two or three sentences that I had spoken, presumably had spoken in Turkish. It wasn't until months into this routine that one of the students who spoke, just barely spoke a little English, came up to me and said basically, you know, she isn't saying what you're saying. It turned out I didn't know what my lectures sounded like in Turkish or were even close to what I was saying, but there I was stuck with it. Well, we lived with it, and I chastised her to be very careful about translations of what I'm saying. I didn't want erroneous information going out in the form of education.
Did that student ever tell you what she was saying?
No, just that it was different from what I was saying, and some of it didn't match what I was saying.
I wonder, that's weird. That's almost like maybe she was told what to say regardless of whatever you said, in a way.
No, I just think she was inefficient.
Oh, okay.
And she'd look at my lecture and raced through translating it, so it used as little of her time as possible.
Were you able to speak to her?
Yes, she
spoke English.
She spoke
very well.
English.
Okay.
I did speak to her, and I never heard another complaint. But my teaching there was interrupted after several months, because I was demonstrating to the students television techniques. USIS in Turkey which is the branch of the USIA, had a lot of film of various things that were American, promoting the American way of life. I had access to those films, and they let me borrow a projector. So I selected, not for any political reasons, but just simply because I looked over a lot of these films, and the best action footage that they had at the USIS that illustrated for me camera techniques and editing, and was exciting, was some pictures that had been taken and put together into a documentary, a short 15-minute film on the tragedy of the Berlin Wall and the tragedy of the people who were trying to escape from East Germany over that wall. And the footage showed pictures of East Germans being shot, trying to climb the wall, come over the wall, and some of them actually made it in the footage. But it was exciting footage, very dramatic. Well, it was a cold day, and there were a lot of students, not my students, milling around in the corridors outside the classrooms just to get out of the outdoors. While this film was being shown in my classroom, quite a few of them drifted into the classroom to watch the movies. Among them were some really hot-headed Turks who took great exception to the U.S. version of the wall. When the lights went on, they stormed me and the projector saying, you're a propagandist. They wanted the film and they wanted the projector. All this is taking place in a classroom where no one really spoke English but me and my interpreter, who fled the classroom at the instant that this gang ran in, ran toward me. She wanted no part of this. Well, in a haphazard sign language, trying to be as gentle as possible, trying to avoid any signs of confrontation, I got across to them that I could not permit them to take the film and the projector. But the dean of the department on a lower floor had that power, and I suggested that we go down with the projector and the film to the dean's office. If they could convince him that they wanted the projector and the film and it was right for them to take it, they could have it. Well, the dean jumped all over them when we got down there. They never had a chance to explain anything. They got run out of the university grounds immediately. I thought, well, boy, that was a close call. Well, I didn't realize how serious this whole thing was until the next day, when the newspapers in Ankara all had stories about me being a CIA agent, propagandizing students in my classroom. This was a scandal for the university. The reaction was pretty severe and fast. State Department decided that it'd be a good idea to get me out of Ankara at the moment. They had a lecture in Nicosia, Cyprus, that they needed to fill, and they sent me there to fill that lecture. I went to Cyprus and at the United States quarters there, in a library. There was, I would guess about 50 people who attended that lecture, in which I just talked about American television and how newsrooms are set up and how the news is covered. The head of the Cyprus Broadcasting, CBC, Cyprus Broadcasting Corporation, a day or two later, asked the State Department representative in Nicosia, would it be possible to borrow me to do a survey of their newsroom and make recommendations on how it might be improved and more modernized. Well, that all happened pretty fast. The State Department was delighted to get me out of Ankara at this point. That whole thing about me being a CIA agent finally blew over and all that nonsense. I don't know who was more insulted, me or the CIA. However, I spent a couple of months No, it wasn't that long. It was more like 6 weeks in Nicosia by myself. The family stayed in Ankara. I took stock of the newsroom there, how it was run. It was a very peculiar setup, actually. The writers would write the news script, but the writers didn't know how to type. And so they had typists who would then type what the writers wrote in longhand. And the readers would read the typewritten version. And their concept of film was really very primitive. I spent a great deal of time looking into all the various departments at CBC and wrote a long, long report at the end with very concrete suggestions on how that whole situation would be improved, could be improved. And it was much to my pleasure that I much later learned that 50% of what I had recommended had been installed in their newsroom. Well, during this period of time, the family did come to Cyprus, and I wanted to illustrate to them how a news story is done. We went to Limassol on Cyprus and caught the overnight boat to Haifa. I filmed, I forget there was a news story at the time that tied in whereby people were afraid to go to Israel. There had been an air incident, some terrorist act. And I was simply illustrating that there are other ways to go to Israel. You can come to Cyprus and take the overnight boat to Haifa, go on to Tel Aviv or anywhere else you want to go, and come back the same way. I shot the pictures I wanted of people on the ship and us going over there. I brought it back, and it served as a very good illustration for them on constructing a story from scratch, not waiting for something to happen to run for it, but to interpret a situation on which there was a local angle. The trip to Haifa enabled us to spend, and you were there, Joe, spend some time in Israel. It was a couple of days, I think, we had there, not much more than that. We went to Tel Aviv, we went to Jerusalem, went on the prescribed walk that Christ took before his crucifixion, and we generally went sightseeing, came back the same way we went, and you and Joanna ended up going back to Ankara while I stayed on for a little while longer. I was very pleased with how the Cyprus part of that year worked. It was highly successful. The professorship at the University of Ankara was highly unsuccessful. I simply tolerated the year. It was not a very pleasant situation because the embassy, the U.S. embassy, was down on me. Anyone in America, American officialdom, steered clear of me as though I had the plague all over the letter that Joanna had written on mobilization day to the Herald Tribune, the International Herald Tribune, which caused a great deal of flutter in the United States Embassy in Ankara because the ambassador had been severely criticized in that letter. And I don't know, but there must have been some flack also from Washington that made me a persona non grata from their standpoint.
Did you ever go back into the classroom after that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I finished up my duties in Ankara, and we left Ankara pretty much the same way we came in our little Volkswagen Squareback. We crossed over into Italy from that long stretch of Greek land, and we drove that distance, and then there's a ferry boat, the point closest to Italy that took cars. We drove up from, I can't remember whether you were on there or you had flown home separately.
I went home
so
early.
So it was just Joanna and myself.
Work at the summer camp. Well, but before you left, I mean, while you were there and not able to teach, you were still doing news broadcasts for ABC Radio and Monitor, weren't you?
ABC Radio, not Monitor, no. Not from there. ABC Radio and ABC Television, the biggest story that I had to cover for ABC was the earthquake in Geddes. Geddes was a village of 5,000-10,000 people, some 700 miles to the southwest of Ankara. And one morning in Ankara, I got a phone call from ABC in New York saying, what's the situation with the earthquake? I did what I told any student not to do. My first reply was, what earthquake? And they filled me in. They said, didn't you feel it? I said, no, I didn't. And they said, we want you to get there, film it, and do voiceover, and we'll figure out how to get the film to New York. Well, how do I get there? 700 miles.
They obviously weren't aware that it was 700 miles.
Yeah,
away.
I told them it was 700 miles, and they said they didn't care what it cost. Get there. Well, my best friend in Ankara was Paul Dora, who was the head of the Peace Corps contingent that was there. Paul spoke Turkish and was from California, a guy from born in Angels Camp, ended up at Berkeley, got a law degree at Berkeley and joined the Peace Corps and worked his way up to being an official. I wanted Paul to come with me, and he almost bit, but his wife Vita said, it's too dangerous. You don't dare go. I said, what's the next best thing I can do? He said, I know a Turkish cab driver who speaks some English. And he negotiated with the cab company at the corner of where we lived. And it was agreed that they would go with me immediately. We had to take off. You know, all of this is in condensed time. I'm talking about a matter of hours, I was on my way. I contracted with the taxi company, and or Paul did, and we settled for, I think, $700 was the price of the cab ride. And we drove all that day and into the evening. There were two drivers, so they split the driving. And we got to Geddes at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I couldn't do much until daylight, except get the lay of the land and generally figure out what I could do and how I could do it, the best way to get rid of it once I finished the job. Daylight came. This was a disaster that had killed 1,400 people. The town was in shambles. There was nothing that had been built to withstand earthquakes there. I took as many pictures as I could. I had a tape recorder. I recorded whatever I thought would go with the pictures that I took. And we got back in the cab and drove to Istanbul. That's another 700 miles. In Istanbul, before we crossed the Dardanelles, the cab... This whole thing got a little complicated, and I wanted to get rid of that cab because I didn't think I needed it anymore. I had money to take local taxis in Istanbul. I sent the cab and the two drivers home from the Asian side of the Dardanelles, and I crossed on the ferry to the European side and managed to contact New York from one of the places from which I could do broadcasts. And I did a voice broadcast for radio and made arrangements for the shipment of the film and the tape immediately. They had figured out that the best way for this to be handled was for me to send my material to Paris where it would be picked up by an NBC employee in Paris and transshipped from Paris to New York. Much too complicated to get it out of Turkey directly to New York. I repackaged the film so it didn't look like film, shipped it on a Turkish Airlines plane. I repackaged it because you're not allowed to ship unprocessed film from Turkey at that time. Got all the information to New York, the waybill number on the package. It was sent freight. And they were to pick it up in Paris. They had the flight, they had the information, and transship it. Paris then took over and would transship it to New York. Well, to make a long story short, nobody picked up that package, or they went to pick it up and it wasn't there. I never knew what the outcome of this was, other than somehow that package ended up in Finland, in Helsinki. And they found it, and a week later, my story ended up on the air. It was no longer fresh, but it was the only footage anyone had of this earthquake in Geddes.
Do you remember how strong the earthquake was? What the magnitude was?
No, I don't remember. I think it was something like a 6 or 7.
But because it was such a primitive village, it got flattened because...
It got flattened because of that, and probably because it was a shallow quake. When I was in Managua, Nicaragua, that was only a 5.6 quake that leveled the city.
Really?
It happened very, very shallow.
Wow.
And shook everything.
That was a really big, devastating earthquake.
Devastating.
I had no idea it was only like a 5. What about the demonstrations, the anti-American demonstrations surrounding the 6th Fleet in Izmir?
There was another story that was a big story that I covered for ABC. It was at a time when anti-American feelings in Turkey were riding pretty high over any number of things. And the 6th Fleet was on maneuvers in the Mediterranean and were going to call at Izmir. I was to go down to Izmir, do a story on whatever took place with the 6th Fleet visit. Well, there are a number of really hot-headed Turks who opposed the idea of American sailors in Turkish waters. They staged demonstrations along the waterfront. I was down there by this time, and the commander of the 6th Fleet decided this was not a good situation for any American sailors to go ashore. This group of Turks were out for blood. So they canceled all shore leaves, and the fleet lay off the harbor several miles out. I could see them. They were kind of small in the horizon, but they were there. I photographed it. Then there was a demonstration that got a little out of hand. Everybody was running around and throwing rocks, and it was raining. And in this little square, I was in the middle of it taking pictures of these very outspoken demonstrators when somebody spotted me and said, "He's an American." Must have been just my manner and the way I was wandering around. I didn't look very European. And they jumped me. And I was going to be the sacrificial lamb. Literally, they were going to kill me. Fortunately for me, there was one girl in this group of young Turks who spoke some English. Had it not been for that, I would have been dead right there and then. I quickly explained to her, "I'm a reporter for the American Broadcasting Company. Don't you want America to see your protest? Don't you want them to understand why you're unhappy? That's all I'm doing here. I'm showing that you're angry with America, which is what you're trying to show. That got me off the hook. And I was left alone, though I got out of that crowd, because I wasn't sure that someone else might not think that was the right way to handle me. One interesting thing happened there. When they started running after me, camera in hand, there was a hotel on the corner. And I ran. Every business in the area had locked their doors. And the hotel had locked its doors, too. And I banged on the door. It was a glass door, a big, heavy glass door. Showed them the camera. Said, "Let me in." Just sign language. They shook their heads. "No way. Out. Out." And it was at that point that I was grabbed by this gang. There was no way for me to escape.
They actually were holding on to you? I mean...
Well, yeah, they grabbed me. And...
Oh, my God. Oh, I
thought that was the closest call I've ever had in my life.
Ooh, hands on. I thought you were just chased. I didn't know that they actually had you in hand.
This concludes Chapter 16.